think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing for Defining Ideas from the Hoover Institution about the question of President Trump being challenged by various states, Minnesota's one of them, about his ability to put himself on the ballot for 2024. I read from, as Richard quotes in his article, the relevant Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Disqualification from holding office is the title. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. Professor, you write discerningly of that paragraph and the question of Donald Trump's eligibility for the ballot in 2024, which, if you follow polls, looks more probable than not. And you challenge the interpretation that is now in the land, and we can anticipate that this question will come to the Supreme Court. Please help me understand.
Well, I mean, this is a big tangle. What you first have to do is to remember that the Civil War was surely the most epic moment in the history of the United States, and that trying to reclaim a nation after the war is over is no small affair. And what they were worried about was disloyalty within the ranks of individuals who were to hold public office, who had engaged in an insurrection. That does not mean observe an insurrection. It means participate in it. And if you read through the whole section, it's a clean sweep. We don't want them basically being holding federal office. We don't want them being elected for the presidency or so forth. We don't want them to hold under any state and to come in there if they were done this. Well, this is a pretty powerful prohibition. And so the bar is pretty high to figure out who should get in there and what. And so the first thing you want to do is, how do you read this clause? And the simple statement is, every word has to count when you read something as big and as complicated as this. And most people don't take the effort to figure out what all the words mean. So in my Hoover column, I pointed out a truncation of this, which essentially start from no person. And then they go right down to the stuff having to do with who participated in an insurrection, engaged in an insurrection, and leave out most of the stuff in the middle. It's a very bad way, because the first question you have to do is to ask who is covered by this. And then the second question is, how is the enforcement mechanism to take place? So on the first thing, if you look at the words, be a senator or representative in Congress, why are they very worried about this? Because they understand that senators and representatives in Congress are chosen at the state level. And they're frightened to death when the southern states come back into the fold. They will elect people to these particular offices who are actively engaged in an insurrection against the United States, and they don't have any trust in their loyalty. And then it says an elector of the president or vice president Well, why would they mention the electors but not the president? Again, it's pretty clear. The electors are essentially people who are chosen in individual states. And the view is that these people are chosen and they are essentially insurrectionists. You have the same problem about loyalty and conscience, and you have no other check against them. So you put them on the list. All right. And then they say, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. Well, you're trying to get both kinds of offices, and we know why. And then they also talk about executive or judicial offices. And the question that people say is, well, you smuggle the president into the head of somebody who holds an office. After all, he is an officer of the United States in the sense that he's the executive officer of the United States. But there are definitions that really do this. And the first thing you note is, if you put in the electors for the president and the vice president, and you don't put in the president, it's not a casual omission. It's a negative omission that counts. And then if you read the appointments clause of the Constitution, it is located in Article 2, what becomes perfectly clear again is that to be an officer of the United States means that you have to be somebody who has been appointed by an elected official. An elected officer is not. An elective officer is not an officer of the United States. And then what you do is you start to see how all of these stuff are put into place. And if you go and you read Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, the president shall, and with the advice and consent of the Senate, to make treaties, right, and appoint officers, right, and all other ministers, and all other officers of the United States. So the president is appointing the officers, right? It's clear that he's not meant to be an officer. He is an elected official. And the basic theory was that if you did this, what you would find is that the election of a president being done nationally under all sorts of safeguards and so forth doesn't pose a risk if, in fact, you've eliminated the hotbeds of opposition that exist at the state level. So it's a perfectly coherent plan. Now, it's also a plan that engages in overkill. Because what it does is it seems to make sure that these folks are out. And then the question is, what do we do in order to soften this if we decide on the basis of new information that the somebody who did engage in insurrection of some sort is now fit for office? It says, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of its each house, remove such disability. Well, that makes perfectly sense for officers who are appointed by the president. It makes no sense for the presidency to be somebody who may be removed by subject to a disability that could be removed. He's not selected by these people. There's no appointment process that's necessary for them. So what happens is people start to say, well, this is self-executing. They don't mean that at all. Self-executing refers to treaties that essentially, when adopted and signed by the president, have the force of law in the United States, even though they're not ratified by Congress. There's nothing self-executing if you have 50 different states, each with different procedures, who are entitled on the basis of some magical reading of the clause to make the independent determination of whether the president has engaged in an insurrection. You're going to get inconsistent determinations. You're not going to go whether it's an administrative procedure, a judicial procedure, some combination of that. You have no idea what to say about any inconsistent determinations that are made across state lines. And the same kinds of ugly political forces that one sees in operation in trashing the judicial code of ethics put forward by the Supreme Court are going to let run wild around the land as everybody wants to make these kinds of cases. And then if you look at the case, it's kind of laughable. I mean, I've heard Will Bode talk about it, and I think there's a serious lapse in judgment. He and Paulson, Michael Paulson. And I said, well, you know, he got really upset in the morning. I said, go to the White House and the Capitol building and defend your rights. Well, that's not an insurrection. He was trying to tell people you're entitled to march to a building in order to influence other people. That's the standard kind of political activity that everybody takes place. And if you say it's an insurrection because you didn't obey various stop signs and so forth, then every rioter in the country is an insurrection.
We have 30 seconds, Richard. Go ahead. 30
okay,
seconds.
Well, also the whole method doesn't work. And the Supreme Court should get involved in this thing as quickly as possible because there's no new information to be had. And we don't want the campaigns to be corrupted by this endless diversion. Get the politics out of this thing and maybe we'll have a decent and fair
election. And the vote on the court, 6-3, 9-0, your estimation?
I would assume 9-0.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution writing and defining ideas about a case we can anticipate before the Supreme Court, also commenting on the new ethics code for the Supreme Court. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.